This is Don't Abroad Stocks. Good morning. Are you there with me? This is Don't Abroad Stocks. Good morning.
How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Okay, fine. I'd like to deal with another case of wastage and unnecessary expenditure that were portrayed on us by the last administration. Even in the environment, when there were calls for the merging of some statutory corporations, they done exactly the opposite by increasing them, right? We learned something last week that the tourism agencies is to become one again, which make a whole lot of sense. Now, I think to go about here a bit. On the 18th of December 2012, the then tourism minister, Mr. Rizzicilli, stated that with the establishment of two new entities, the BTA staff would not be sent home. 2 years later, on the 19th of March 2014, he made a U-turn when he said none of the hundred staff at the BTA would be unceremoniously chased away. 8 days later, on the 27th of March 2014, came the retrenchment of the two top officials, then a further two, and then 11 followed. By the end of August, Cilli noted that the BTA has $1.6 million in compensation packages, right? For the workers. On the 21st of April 2014, he said, they're bound to be fallout from changes made at the BTA, as well as overhaul in the coming months at all the missions, including the Barbados headquarters. On the 30th of July 2014, the chairman of BTA said there will be more casualties at the BTA as its replacements were set to come on stream within the two-week period. He also went on to say that the BTA had become a slothful and wasteful and inefficient organization. Now, obviously, when the Prime Minister brought the mini budget, she said that the two entities will be coming off of the consolidated fund, and they will be no longer getting the $96.3 million in subsidies from the government, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, what I'm trying to say here is, this is what some of the things that make this country economically so badly off. Because I hear that you had one entity, this, and they then turn it into two entities. And I guess with different staff, different chairmen, whatever. But there's a lot of concern that people have regarding the airline taxes and the visitors. But if you could cast your mind back, at the end of March 2012, two British operators, Hayes and Jarvis, reported that significant bookings to the Caribbean, which showed a 24% increase after April 2012. That's the month that then the 8% hike in the airline taxes duty free went on the tourism. So I'm saying, yes. The APD,
mm-hmm.
the APD, the airline passenger duty. So that show also an increase. But you know that this government was supposed instead of cutting the statute corporations, they increased them. They also brought in BRA. They also had the one at the culture ministry. So I'm saying these guys were woefully inefficient. and slack with the economy of Barbados. Hence we're in the position that we're in. You know?
Okay. The only comment here would be in relation to the merging of the statutory corporation. This is a policy decision on the part of the two administrations, where one thought the importance of separating product from marketing. And then now this administration believes that while there's a differentiation between product and marketing, it can all be done under one board and one organization.
Right.
So that's one of the realities of different administrations. People always talk about, oh, the BLP and the DLP are pretty, they're not primarily different. They do the same things, the same social programs, maybe a little different, extended in one regard via the other. But this is clearly a difference in policy direction and policy vision. But there's some merit in the separation. But as you're saying, the separation should not be inefficient. The separation should have been at a cost saving to the administration and not an increase. But we would probably have to punch the numbers then to see whether it was an increase, because you're talking about the casualties, the 15 casualties in 2014, and then the others that were reported. I don't know what number was subsequently done. But yes, I take your points on board. I don't necessarily want to say that I fully endorse everything you said, because you made some pretty broad statements about the administration was very inefficient or was very slack with its management of the economy. And I like to use information first before I come to those conclusions. But I note your contribution.
Okay.
Thank you so much. I'm always in awe at the last caller, the same caller who he comes with his dates and his, you know, who said what on what day. He I don't know if he keeps a newspaper, a filing cabinet with newspapers, or if he organizes them in terms of their subject matter, but he always is one you can rely on to give you some extra information as it relates to what was said and when and what the numbers were. This is Down to Brass Tacks. We have another caller. Good afternoon. Good morning, sorry.
Good morning.
Hi, good morning. First lady for the morning.
Yeah, I don't mean to be rude, but I just want to pick up on something that a statement you would have made the last time I heard you on the air.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's all right.
What ethnicity or society do you think that Jesus was from?
Jesus. His father was, and his mother, they were from middle class, actually.
You think so? If you read the Bible, the poor among the Jews used to sacrifice turtle doves when you were poor.
Mm-hmm.
So they cannot have been from among the middle class.
Anyway, right, so what class helped me there?
Okay, all right, let me make another point then, if that doesn't make the point to you. They said, can anything good come out of Nazareth?
Yes, I remember that.
Then he turned and he said, they that wear fine clothing are in king's palaces.
Mm-hmm.
And then to add to that, not talking about him himself, but when he was preaching, they said the common man, meaning the castaway in society, heard him more gladly.
Yeah, they always flocked to him. Everywhere he went, he was doing good.
But what I'm saying is that in our society, we like to judge people based on their financial standing or status. And, you know, in Christ, it's not about that. It's not about where you are from. It is who you are. And that's
definitely
Martin Luther King was.
Your heart. Your heart is as well.
He would have said, you know, the day should come when you judge a person based on their character and not based on
the color,
the size of their wallet or what house or, you know, what car they drive.
Mm-hmm.
But I just want to move on from that. Yesterday, I barely had enough bus fare. I was going somewhere and I got by Eagle Hall. And again, this situation that keeps cropping up is that the music that was playing on the Zerda van, again, was horrible, lewd, and I don't need to go on.
Mm-hmm.
I had hardly any money in my... I barely had $2 for the bus fare to return.
You have played already? You paid already?
Yes.
Ooh.
And I said to the guy, you know, I said, look, stop this van, I got to get off. Because
you didn't ask back for your money?
I was so What happened is, I have a friend, I know someone, but I don't have any friends. I know someone who has a business in that area, and I thought to myself, I would go and I would ask them for bus fare. Mm. However, when I got off, I realized that that particular day, they don't normally open on Wednesdays. Mm. When I got off the van, I explained myself to two ladies at the Eagle Hall van stand. I had got off the van in a rush because of the music that was playing, and could somebody give me $2 to get where I was going? Mm. And they looked at me blank, as if I was nothing or no one. They didn't, as if they were from outer space. And a gentleman turned. He looked reluctant as well, but at least he had the kind courtesy to spare $2. And I took that. Unfortunately for me, a transport board bus came along. No, I worked for myself. And I remember sometime back I was in a supermarket, and this lady, she was always very kind to me. Not of Barbadian origin. And she said to me, oh, you look nice. Keep it up. And I said to her, what do you mean? And she said to me, the ladies, which the Barbadian women said to her in the office that I go to sell my jewelry, that I'm a drug addict. I think if we don't, in Barbados, we don't wake up, we're talking about this IMF and how is it different, we're going to smell hell in this country. Have a pleasant day.
Thanks so much. I really wanted to ask you what it was that you disagreed with me on. You said you were calling to comment that. But nonetheless, thanks for your call. And I always like to hear from all different types of people, and always good to hear from ladies as well. And just to respond in, as it relates to people begging on the streets, oftentimes you have a hesitation when you don't know the person, or you just assume that that person is a career beggar. And some people give and some people don't give. So they might have given a couple times in the past, and therefore this particular day they didn't have or didn't feel like giving. So that could be one. This is Down to Brass Tacks. This is Down to Brass Tacks. You are on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, how are you this morning?
I am doing well, thanks.
Fine, yes. I just would like to say something there about the last call of the lady that booked the minibus.
Yes.
I am one of the people in this country who believe that our policies, there are things that has to change, and there's only one way that certain things can be changed in this country. You got round holes, you got square diameters, and you should fit the squares in the squares and the rounds in the rounds. So that when you finish all the create to be fitting properly, and you will get the right decisions and the right reactions that you should get from these things. The reason why I'm saying this is that I happened to have to travel on those private vehicles over the past few months. And some of the things that I am seeing and experiencing on those PSVs, I do believe that the time has come that the owners have to share some of the responsibility for the things that is going on those PVSs. And I feel that the time come that they should start taking away some of the licenses for some of the things that are going on those vehicles. Because there's no way that the public should constantly be speaking about these things, and they are happening day after day, and you will go back on the same vehicles or a next vehicle and see the same people. Stop targeting the drivers and conductors and start dealing with the owners. I believe that you will get a better result coming out of that entity. Because I would have traveled on one, and I record what was going on it, because when I see somebody that should be interested, I'm going to play it for them. And the music wasn't only loud, but the behavior. And then the driver and somebody that was sitting on the engine base next to them and the conversation that they were having, I think that the owners of these vehicles need to start paying some attention and see what is going on out there. Now, I would like also to say that recently I have heard, I mentioned it to Mr. Price in the conversation I had with him last week of an incident in the Charlotte Rock in the port that I would have dealt with where a 9-year-old child would have lost his life in the Charlotte Drive over in the Burfin area where by the flour mill.
Where, sorry?
And,
when?
By the flour mill.
When?
This was back in the 1970s or thereabout, where this guy would have drowned, because I would have taken them out of the water, and by between my leaving there and going to Fort Willoughby, I had to return a few, about 2 hours after or so, looking, and then I realized it would have been one of the same youngsters. Now, I believe that when I am hearing the ad about the port's position and the with the SPS code and so on, I think the time has come that that code and the importance of it be taught for a few months at grade the citizens of Barbados on it. Let them know the harm that they don't care attitude, because they want to go and they want to go in and jump in and bid and start taking action against them. Because if they don't fall in, if the country fall out of line with the ISPS code, the ships that fall under that banner can well be pulled out of service in Barbados, and it can hurt our tourism product. And I believe that these people, both adults and those parents who have children that will try to continue to infiltrate and go in that area and bid, need to be made examples of and let them understand that the CEO or the port, because if they're breaking the rules in there and so on, they can be charged. And the CEO or the port can hold a court and sentence them too. Do we need to teach some of these laws and things like this so that people will become acquainted and understand them and then take the action on them? Because if you continue where people can breach and go and jump in the sea and bid with these things and just come in and saying this action would be taken, make sure that the word seems maybe, make it shall. If you infiltrate and you go in this area, you will be prosecuted. And I think that that will put some things to this, because I would like to see that area
carted off.
It's carted off, and people are breaching it because I feel very disturbed when I pass there and I will see people out there doing things I know the better. And I think that they should do some education on it, the level, what the port is in, and the government of Barbados is within this code, and what it's saying on to, and the dangers of their demarcationists can hurt the country. That's all I have to say at this point.
Thanks so much. The International Maritime Organization has, the code is really the International Ship and Port Facility Security. The gentleman just mentioned the ISPS code. And that has that's a code that speaks to the measures of enhancing security around ships and port facilities. And they have a number of editions or iterations, if you want to call it that. And it was in 9/11 actually, when they put moves and measures in place to enhance the security around ports. And that's where that code, the last version of that code, was made. This is down to brass stats. I think, yeah, I agree that we need to not breach, because you are putting yourself in a precarious position if you take away barricades that shouldn't be there, that you shouldn't be in. This is down to brass stats. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Gill. How are you?
I'm doing well, sir. It's
11:05.
Yeah,
I want to about Jeff Sessions using the Epistles of the Romans against the migrants when the children were separated from them. I don't know if we know, maybe talk about that. But first of all, I want to hit on two other things. first of all, I came in just in time to hear you speaking about one of your colleagues speaking about a leader. Now, in sports, it's always stated that a champion, a true champion, is never afraid to step forward in adversity. Two, never afraid to fail. And three, always has the ability to come back after an adversity. That's how this sports would actually put it. Okay. Never afraid to fail.
Mm-hmm.
Take for example, in ice hockey, Gretzky was never afraid to lose a game.
Mm-hmm.
Maradona made Argentina lost the World Cup on his foot.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't afraid to fail. The quarterbacks such as Elway and Montana and Warren Moon, these people, Mr. Bob Table, but then never afraid to fail.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a mark. That's three marks of a true leader.
What the three are? You go back. I know I did some reading on there are quite a number, but there are some that stand out. Empathy is one big one. Understanding your people, etc. Right, and I'm asking you to repeat it, please.
Right, and the leader themselves, whether male or female. Said they're never afraid to step forward in an adversity.
Mm-hmm.
They're never afraid to fail.
Mm-hmm.
And they always have the ability to come back after an adversity. And death is not necessarily an adversity.
Okay, so that's resilience then. Okay.
Right, exactly. Yes, always have to be resilient. And everything else goes on with that communication, empathy. Everything else goes on with that because they understand what the other people on their team is actually feeling, and they're stepping forward and they're taking responsibility for whatever happens.
Mm-hmm.
Not incidentally, what happened to the LB.
So who tell you that they're not regrouping? I understand a big meeting is coming up. Who tell you that they're not preparing themselves and trying to look to put some new measures in place and some new blood, etc.?
It makes no difference. Look, there's a you know we have a problem in the West here.
What makes no difference?
I might explain to you this way. That you know we're having a problem with kids and using codeine and stuff like that in the Western Hemisphere.
Mm-hmm.
The bank card missing getting in codeine.
Mixing it, yes.
Right. Now in Nigeria they're having the same problem. A female doctor was speaking on that subject, and this is what she said. She said, as a Muslim, when I see something wrong, I have to speak about it, and after that I have to do something about it. What was that? Is that half of the message that the Ali Kapawala boy gave on the stage, and they want to say that Miss Molly should be taken out before the judge here, but that is what you've been. Remember Deuteronomy chapter 18, verse 18? That's what the prophet said. Anyway, that's besides the point. Now, second thing.
You got to tell me what's Deuteronomy 18:18, because I don't know the Bible, so.
The prophecy for the prophet to come, how God will put his words into the mouth of that particular prophet. And whoever goes against those words, you don't actually will get him into account. Did you have people taken into account? Anyway, that's a real sign that the research that being really missed. Now, yeah. No, are you there?
I'm here. I'm here very much. I'm trying to process you. You know, you're moving fast and you're going to different things. So I'm trying to process what you're saying.
I was in the background, so I think you're speaking to coming on there. Yeah, this lady who speaks about the Nazarenes, can anything come in Nazareth? The people who wrote that particular thing, that was just a way of programming mind against the Nazarenes. When if anybody who does research knows, remember when Nero burnt down Rome and tried to blame it on the I won't call him Christ, the fall of Jesus. It was actually the Nazarites who were actually the people who he killed off. The Nazarites are who we today call the Nazarenes.
Mm-hmm.
Who gave Nazareth? They were the followers of the prophet. They're the ones who wanted to get rid of because he didn't want the message coming down.
But what she was referring to, though, was the classism that existed at the time where they treated Nazarites as though they were...
But what I'm saying is...
Persons from Nazareth, sorry.
That particular phrase is just a bit of programming the mind of the reader against the Nazarenes. You have to get what I'm saying. Because don't forget, no. So somebody said something the other day. He said that... it was Mr. Corey Lane. Corey Lane said that even from the 4 AD, they said these letters weren't really supposed to be read by come down. This is true because people expected the earth to be destroyed a long time ago. And Karen Armstrong, the former nun, who's one of the leading authorities on religion, also said so in an interview in 2009. And she said a lot of things. And she was the one that was brought to answer some statements which Tony Blair made after the Chilcot report came out. Anyway, that's besides the point. Now, Jeff Sessions used a part of the letter, the epistle to the Romans, against the people there, the migrants coming in, and that's the office that separated children from their parents. Now, I don't know if you know or not, but Mr. Johnson III, I once actually challenged the Roman Catholic Church as the origin of their church.
Mm-hmm.
And the first minister of Scotland, definitely going to put the United States, in her pocket, in her pocketbook from this on. Because she had an ancestor, more or less. Not say direct, but she had a gentleman there called William Robinson Smith, one of the most learned scholars of his time. He actually made church and state look small in the court of law in his lifetime. And he gave a very detailed and accurate description of the letter epistles. You can see it online. I actually bought the dictionary from the Cloister Bookstore, but it's online too. And this is how you can see it. All you have to do is to find his Smith Bible Dictionary online, Epistles to the Romans, and he made some statements which have been proven by other scholars around the globe. Boy.
You mentioned 4 AD. I thought you were talking, and then you mentioned the Catholic Church. I thought you were talking about the history of the Catholic Church.
Right. The history of the Catholic Church, which is actually a Greek church, is inside the book of Epistles.
Okay.
Epistles to the Romans.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what William Robinson Smith knew in his lifetime. That's why the first minister of Scotland should really put them in her pocketbook. She got them red-handed because it's a known fact that there's a major discrepancy about Peter ever having been the founder of that church. And he states it quite clearly. He said that is a fiction for the purpose of a romance. and other writings have shown that the literature that they claim that they used to claim that Peter was the founder of the Roman Catholic Church, called the Clementine literature, are actually forgeries, unknown forgeries.
But you sure that they meant Peter, the apostle who heard when?
Just read it. And not only that, too, they've actually hidden a black pope by the name of Victor. You should ask them why they hid Victor the black pope. Have a good morning.
This is Dr. Brastax. This is Dr. Brastax. Numbers.
Hello.
Hi, good morning.
Miss Gill?
Yes, speaking.
How are you, ma'am?
Doing well, thanks.
Ms. Gail, two issues we want to raise you this morning. One has to do with the current issue of the Town Country Planning Act that is on the review. And I would like to suggest that one of the changes that should be made to that act is that these large land holdings, which are normally under cultivation and are now growing grass, are impacting very heavily on the size of our food bill. I therefore think the government should reserve the right that any land holding that is out of production for 3 years or more should compulsorily either by be obtained by the government, or it should be compulsorily required to sell or lease that land. In which case, permission should be given to cut your land up in maybe to 5, 10 or 20 acre lots. And there should be a benchmark price of $50,000 an acre to stop people from, stonewalling and so on, and putting the price out of the reach of the average person. Of course, that land would also be used for agricultural purposes. The other point I would like to make, we have a lot of properties in Barbados which are tourism-related, restaurants, guest houses, hotels, condominiums. These properties have been closed up for many years. And I think that after 3 years, these properties should be compulsory sold at auction, because a lot of them for taxes and other things, water work bills and so on. And these things are really causing problems in our economic capacity to hold our own, because when you owe lots of taxes on it and it's shut up, it's not productive, the only thing you can do is sell it. So I am suggesting that these properties that are up for sale, I know some that have been up for sale for 7 and 8 years, I don't know who to sell them to. And these properties should compulsorily be sold at auction so that the taxes or whatever can be recovered, and the monies can be paid to the estate or the person who owned it originally.
Question for you. Are you aware that the discussions as it relates to town and country planning modification, are you aware that they will give an opportunity for the public to weigh in and to share their views? And did you hear the first deliberation that took place on Monday?
I didn't hear it.
Okay. I would encourage you to be there or to share your views. You can put them together in some form or fashion and be able to present them to the commission so that, you know, there can be consideration to some of your suggestions.
You don't think they listen to your program?
No. There is a specific opportunity for persons to share their views. And I'm suggesting that if you do feel as strongly as your views, as strongly as submitting these views, use that opportunity given to the public to put those views forward. They will be considered, and you could also get feedback as well from those persons. There was Dr. Yolanda Aline, and a whole number of other persons who are participating in that, in advancing the measures, the changes to the Town and Country Planning Act. And if you want to share your views, I'm suggesting to you that there is the opportunity for the public to weigh in. I'm not familiar with the days, but it would be good if we can get the days and on this program, share those with the persons in the public who want to speak to that particular subject. I think that would be...
Do you think you can also submit them in writing as well?
I think you can as well, yes.
Okay, good. All right, well, I will check your advice.
I think that's a good idea because you're making a valid point in terms of potential and stymieing potential. I don't know that the legislation allows for a person who hasn't dealt with their particular property for any inordinately long time that it can be compulsorily acquired. That's your suggestion. And therefore, it's something that you can share with the requisite persons in that field.